You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, the lovely Luke Kupfer.
Oh, that's very nice. Thank you.
This week, we are talking about inefficient incarceration. But first, we have a Spotify update.
Okay.
So, we have had over 1,183,000 streams, which is insane.
Just on Spotify?
Just on Spotify.
That's too much.
Over 81,000 listeners on Spotify and over 45,000 followers. We hit 45,607.
That is amazing.
That's mad,
wow.
Right? So, if everyone who follows us on Spotify tells a friend to follow us on Spotify, and then some of them tell some of their friends to follow us on Spotify, we'll have over 100,000 followers on Spotify.
If we do it six times, we reach everyone in the world.
We should do that. Everyone tell six friends.
No. No, hang on. No, if everyone tells everyone they know six times, we reach everyone in the world. Sorry, got the math wrong there.
We have a question, though. We've got a question for this week. As always, the question is, do you think prison works? Leave a comment now and another at the end of the episode if it changes your mind. So get down to the YouTube comments right now if you're listening on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else where you get podcasts. Go to the YouTube comments, leave a comment there telling us what you think of prison. Does it work? Does it not? And then come back at the end and let us know again. What do you think, Luke? Does prison work?
Well, it depends on what you mean by work. Work for what? What's the goal? What's the goal of prison? Does it work at keeping people in there? Yes, it's quite effective at keeping people in there. Not many people get out. So, yeah, it works in that way.
Good, good. Okay, that's a great place to start.
Also, the American system puts them to work. So I suppose prison works could be the slogan for all of prison America.
Let's just get into what prison is.
Sure.
So first off, I just want to give a broad overview of why we're doing this. The episode is called The Science of Prisons. And you may think, why is a science podcast doing an episode on prisons? It's because I don't like them. No, it's not just because I don't like them. It's because
just because you don't like them.
But no, it's not just because I don't like them, but I think it's interesting. I think it's something that we don't think about nearly enough. Prisons are just this accepted part of society, and there are many parts of our society and culture that we just take for granted. Mm. Like, oh, this has always been around. How can we get rid of prisons? They've been there forever. How can we get rid of police? They've been there forever. This thing existed for a long time, therefore, you know, we have to keep it. But then you actually look into these things and you find, oh, maybe they're not as, you know, sort of perennial as we thought. Maybe they've not been around since time immemorial. But maybe they've not been around for as long as we thought. And maybe they're new and can be reformed, remade, or just completely done away with entirely. So I kind of wanted to dive into prison just to give everyone a better idea of what is going on there. Because, hey, if you've not committed any crimes, you probably don't know all that much about prison outside of TV shows, which is not a good way to learn about prison, to be honest.
Last night I dreamt I was going to prison for 2 years for not paying a doctor's bill. And I had a little pet sort of shrew that ran around the room, and I was going to spend the 2 years writing screenplays. Real dream that I had last night.
Dreamt you were an American, basically. But yeah, look, the basic point of this is that sometimes in science we can have evidence that something is broken, but still have no drive to fix it. And that's what today's episode is about, not to spoil it, but there you go. So first off, what is prison? What would you say prison is, Luke?
I would say it is a sort of institution where you keep people in some sort of cage or some other form of restricted area where they can't mingle with the rest of society, usually for some kind of punishment.
You have almost 100% got the Britannica definition of prison, so I'll read that out now.
I'm a criminal justice lawyer.
Prison, an institution for the confinement of persons who have been remanded, held, in custody by a judicial authority, or who have been deprived of their liberty following conviction of a crime, or for a crime. A person found guilty of a felony or a misdemeanor may be required to serve a prison sentence. The holding of accused persons awaiting trial remains an important function of contemporary prisons, and in some countries, such persons constitute the majority of the prison population. In the United Kingdom, for example, generally about one-fifth of the prison population is unconvicted or unsentenced, while more than two-thirds of those in custody in India are pre-trial detainees.
You flippin' what?
Yeah. So, prison. What is prison? There's a difference between prison and jail, first off. So, prison is where you go when you've been sentenced, generally, and jail is where you go before that.
Yeah, unless you're rich.
Yeah, obviously, and then you don't go anywhere. Back to your mansion. Those are the broad differences between those two words.
All jails are prisons, but not all prisons are jails.
Sure. But look, basically what to take away from this is that prison is a place where we put people who we think have done a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
And by a bad thing, it could be something that is bad for society, bad for themselves, bad for the government, bad for rich people who run the government. No, that's not true. They don't all run the government. Sometimes they just pay off their mates who do run the government. Anyway, so we're going to have to dive into this because there is a lot to cover. That's basically what prison is. You know what prison is because you're existing on this planet, right? You know what it is. So let's get into some statistics about prisons. So over 6,000 prisons and jails and sort of mental facilities and other institutions of detainment, right? Exist in the US, over 6,000, holding almost 2 million prisoners out of 330 million citizens. Yeah.
That's too many.
It's too many. Too many citizens in America.
When you said 6,000, I thought you meant that's how many there are in the world.
No. 6,000 prisons and jails in
America.
Yeah. Yeah. So some of those are federal prisons. Some of those are county jails. Some of those are private prisons. Some of those are on Indian or Native American reserves. And some of them, as I said, are mental health facilities for the criminally, you know, criminally insane. Do we still say that? Who cares?
People know what you mean.
So that's just the US, of course. And one thing that often comes up in conversations about prison is about how bad the US is, because the US is pretty bad when it comes to prison. And we think of the UK as being a lot better. It isn't. So 141 prisons exist in the UK. As of June 2022, the UK had a total prison population of approximately 89,520 people. So that was 80,660 in England and Wales, 7,430 in Scotland, and 1,640 in Northern Ireland. And that's out of 67 million citizens, right?
Better. That's starting off from a better place.
Yeah, I mean, look, America's got a massive problem with incarceration. A mass incarceration problem, you could say. And yeah, the UK is better in some ways, but it's not so much better that I would say, hey, the UK is way better than the UK. Both of them are bad. Both of them are bad. Look, one person is stabbing you and robbing you. The other one is just stabbing you or robbing you. Neither are good.
But they're all in prison, though.
Okay, so those are the prison stats, right? You know, 67 million citizens in the UK and about 90,000 prisoners. So 159 prisoners per 100,000 of the population for England and Wales. So that's for 100,000 people, there's 159 prisoners. Okay. Mm-hmm. In England and Wales. In Scotland, that's 162 per 100,000 and 97 per 100,000 in Northern Ireland. So I just want to run through some, I guess, quite specific statistics that I've pulled from a government report. And this is from 2022, I think sort of mid-2022. So this is, first off, the sentence length. So I thought this was interesting. So in 2022, 50% of prisoners had over 4 years determinate prison sentences. About 25-ish% had 1 to 4 years, and under 10%, just over 5%, had less than 1 year. And then, actually, if you look at it, about 15-ish% had an indeterminate sentence. So you know, a sentence of indeterminate length. If we look at gender, 4% of the prison population in 2022 was female. That's down from 17% in 1900. But the decline has been steady over time. I think the lowest was in the 60s and 70s, and it's come up just a little bit from there, but it's gone back down just slightly from the 2000s. The lowest, I think, proportion of the population, the prison population that was female was 2%, and that was in 1968 and 1969. So that means there are 13 female prisoners per 100,000 females in the UK, right?
Yes.
Which, I mean, if you look at this, so women are in jail way less than men are. Men are incarcerated way more, which would make sense if you look at the sort of crimes that are committed by men and women. It breaks down to make some semblance of sense. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying that it is. So if we look at ethnicity, what do you think, Luke? If I say to you that, for example, the UK is 88% white, 2% mixed, 7% Asian or Asian British, and 3% black or black British, what would you say, you know, for example, what percentage of the prison population is black?
Well, we know it's going to be higher than the number of people.
Why is that, Luke? Do black people commit more crimes? Do they deserve to be in jail more? Is this what you were saying?
No. No. I should be very clear about my phrasing here. We know that it's going to be disproportionate because a lot of the things that lead people to go to prison are things that people of those ethnicities are more likely to be exposed to, for example, poverty.
And also arrested and tried.
Being arrested and being like more harshly viewed by jurors and by judges and all these different things.
Racism. You could just call it racism.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. No, go on.
It's a bit more like complicated than that in that there are also like economic issues that mean that black people are more likely to commit a crime. That is true, but not because they're black.
No, I agree. And the interesting thing here is that when I say it's because of racism, I mean that with the knowledge of that being the case. Because black people are generally worse off, let's say, economically than white people in the UK because of racism. I mean, if we look at things like the Windrush scandal, it ultimately comes down to racism.
Yeah. Yes. No, I don't disagree with you. I just mean that there's more to it than the specific overt racism of a judge or a jury or a police officer. There's also systemic and economic and societal and all these other policy and everything. Because so many things that go into it. Yes. Anyway, I'm going to take a wild guess and say that the prison population is 10% black versus the 3%. Of people in the country are black.
Look, I'm so sorry. It's 12%
compared to 3%. It's even worse.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's down by 1 percentage point from 2004, which is, there we go.
Nearly 20 years. Hooray.
If we just break this down a little bit further, I will first say the share of the general population, and then I'll say the share of the prison population, okay? So, share of the general population for white people, that's 88% to 72%. So white people are, incarcerated less frequently. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Mixed is 2 and 5%. So 2% of the general population, 5% of the prison population. Asian or Asian British, 7% of the general population, 8% of the prison population. Black people is 3 to 12%. Obviously,
that,
not stated.
That one is insane.
Yeah.
That is insane.
Yeah, it's mad, right?
Like, you can allow like, with the Asian population, you can allow for there being
a 1%
error of, you know, like, okay, well, that's going to happen in statistics, et cetera, et cetera. Four times?
Yeah, four times. I mean, if you look at mixed, that's, 2.5?
Yeah.
Which, and what the annoying thing about mixed is that it doesn't tell you
but
what.
But mixed will also include people who are mixed black and white.
Yeah. Yeah,
so, like,
exactly.
You know, and from the way that they're treated by society, a lot of the time they are black, like, what, from the treatment they get.
Yeah, well, I think we can have a whole conversation about whether mixed means you're black or white or not. I mean, you don't need to have that conversation. I can tell you about it.
Sure,
actually,
yeah.
At some other point.
But all I mean is, like, you could divide this statistics up based on non-white.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
And then you could go, gosh, that's even worse.
Yeah.
It's even worse than when you divided it up.
Absolutely. Not stated or unrecorded, that makes up 1%. So 824 prisoners in the UK just don't have a recorded race, which is odd. I'm not sure why that is. If we look at population, so the prison population, population. It was very high in 2011, 2012. That sort of time is when it kind of hit its peak in recent memory. You know, this is from 2010 up to 2022. The peak was around about 2011, 2012. That was about 88,000 prisoners. We've obviously brought that down quite a bit. We're sitting a bit lower, it says here. You know, so the population in 2017 peaked in November, 86,327, which was the highest since September 2012. Oh, wow. Really? That does not seem to be obvious on this graph that I'm looking at, but thank God there's words beneath it. And then the lowest point in the recent series was April 2021, 77,859. Now, interestingly, prison population kind of went down a little bit in the past, you know, couple years. Why do you think that might be?
Well, people were going outside less. And they were at home, they were traveling less, some people were on furlough.
Panny D, yeah.
They, you know, lots of reasons why slightly less crime might happen.
Absolutely, yeah. And if we look, so what we can see from this is that from this graph, it seems to be that there was, I mean, if you look at it, there is quite a significant drop. I'll pop this on screen. There's quite a significant drop from 2019 to 2020, 2021. It drops quite a bit. But we're on track. We're heading right back up.
Back up.
Oh, we're going. We're not all the way back up, but we are trending upwards. Yeah.
What a relief.
I know. Whoa, I was worried there for a second. But yeah, no, the interesting thing is that, you know, as the population grows in the UK, you'd maybe expect for the prison population to grow somewhat. But what's interesting is that it doesn't seem to be that, you know, as prison is around for longer, that we have fewer people in prison. In fact, if you look at the projections, this is from the British government, I believe, the projections for England and Wales, we are projecting that it will increase the prison population. The prison population will go...
The proportion.
The population, it says. So, this is just the raw numbers. Mm. They should be increasing. This is just the projections. And the past projections seem to... They varied in accuracy, it shows here. But, you know, not by a terribly large amount, it seems, you know. So if this kind of accuracy sticks around, it is not unlikely that we will see... an increase.
Well, can I just say how nice it is to finally hear a projection for Britain that's on the way up.
Can't wait till 2028 when we hit 100,000 people in prison.
Other than inflation and inflation's on the too far. Inflation's on the way down, but everything else on the way down as well.
Another thing that's going up rapidly is number of prime ministers the Tories can have within the space of a year.
We've had so many prime ministers. We're so lucky. We've had so many prime ministers.
Had so many in my lifetime.
There have been so many prime ministers.
Can you believe that there are some people who existed before us who only had a few prime ministers?
Me? I had the same prime minister for like the first 10 years of my life. Right. Tony Blair popping around the most part being all right and then doing, you know, Iraq. That wasn't good. But
a few little war crimes here and there. Look, who cares about a few war crimes here and there?
Yeah.
Basically, all politicians are terrible. But let's get back into this. So getting back to the statistics, I kind of want to take you through overcrowding. Now, what is prison overcrowding? What do you think it might be, Luke?
Too many prisoners, not enough prison.
That's so true. Well done. Good job. So a prison is classified as overcrowded if the number of prisoners held exceeds the establishment's certified normal accommodation. Now, I'm just reading this verbatim, obviously. The CNA is the prison service's own measure of accommodation and represents the decent standard of accommodation that the prison service aspires to provide all prisoners. So, as of September 2022, how many prison establishments do you think were overcrowded?
I'm going to say... 54%.
52%.
Ah, God.
62.
I told you I'm a criminal justice lawyer. 2% off, as long as I'm within 2%.
And hey, Matt, look, honestly, 62 prisons, 52%. So 52% of all prison establishments were overcrowded, which, that's insane, right? Mm. Over half of them are overcrowded, which just, it's too many people in prison. Too many. Get them out. So, in total, overcrowded prisons held 7,835 more prisoners than the CNA of these establishments. Now, bear in mind, that sounds like a small number somewhat, right? But we were talking about 89,000 people in prison.
Yeah, that's nearly 10% overcrowded as a country.
Yeah, yeah. These are ridiculous numbers.
And prison numbers have fallen during COVID as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I'm going to be honest here. You might be saying, Corey, what, you're taking these, you're twisting these. I got this from a government report. You can find it in the description. It's literally from a government report on prisons. They tell you all this. They know this. They're well aware of it. And What does that do? Nothing. But getting back into it, let's talk about the cost of prisons. What do you think the sort of average cost per prisoner is for a prison?
I reckon about 30 grand.
Man, you're on fire today. I'm not joking. So wow. The Ministry of Justice has several different methods of estimating the average cost per prisoner. The 2019 to 2020 figures show that in England and Wales, the average direct cost per prisoner was £28,974.
Wow.
But taking into account all resource expenditure, the overall cost per prisoner was £42,670. So per person, they are costing more than the median income for the UK. Now, £32,300 is the average median income for the UK, and we are spending more than that on prisoners.
How about you get all the prisoners who are in prison probably for doing stuff because they were poor,
mm-hmm.
like, and then give them £30,000 a year to just like bop around their life not doing crime.
But that's not fair.
And also stimulate the economy but have less people incarcerated.
But that's not fair.
Yeah, I know it's not fair.
I've not committed any. I would just commit a crime so that I can have a nice life. Oh,
yeah.
I've seen the problem here.
Yeah,
I figured it out.
That's the problem. The problem is you don't look after people who don't do crime.
Man,
so you can't look after people who do crime. It's really, it's so annoying.
It's actually infuriating. Taking into account all resource expenditure, the overall cost per place was £44,640. In Scotland, this is published by the prison service, and in 2021 to 2022, the average annual cost per prison place in Scotland was about £41,858. This is kind of ridiculous, right? If you look at Northern Ireland, that number for 2021 to 2022 was £44,868. So we're talking about maybe about 45k per prisoner, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's an obscenely high amount of money. And obviously, you know, that'll be going to paying other people like prison guards,
yeah.
and whatnot. But like, you know, there's food in there. There's healthcare. There's all of these things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we just give them the money? Economists, why don't we just give them the money? Am I asking if we should just print more money?
Well, don't just give them the money. Some of them didn't commit crimes that are based on wealth. So
yeah.
Don't give them the money.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Maybe we should then put that money into mental health care for them.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, maybe.
Yeah. Unless, of course, they're the white collar criminals, in which case, lock them up. No, I am joking. I genuinely don't think that anyone.
I think put them
on
an island and make them all figure out how to survive on minimum wage.
Last time we
that would be like a fun TV
criminals
show
on an island.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, that's
TV show is Fire Festival.
What I mean is like if you have people who are committing like financial crimes, where like they're trying to make like millions of quid, just like. Like those people, I don't have any sympathy for those people.
No, well, I don't have sympathy for them. I have, you know, basic human empathy for them, but I also don't believe that they should go in prison because what's that going to do?
Well, yeah, it's not going to do anything. Take away, like, it's just like take away their license to practice in the financial services industry. There's not a licensed thing, I don't think. But
well, there's also
them from the industry. That's fine.
If it's a money issue, then hold on. They are incentivized to make as much money as possible. You know, people are just incentivized to have as much money as possible. And some people will take that to that extreme.
Yeah, yeah.
And is it really going to fix the problem just to chuck them in a place? I mean, realistically, if they've got that much money, they're not going to chuck
them in a place. It is a strange thing that you have somebody who like, okay, so you got somebody who like defrauds someone mm-hmm. or like does some insider trading or like that kind of crime, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird thing that our strategy for dealing with them is the same as somebody who like murders somebody. Or like, if I said to you, right, so Corey, I got this bloke over here and he did a violent murder.
Mm-hmm.
And I got this bloke over here and he defrauded millions of pounds from the COVID benefits scheme or mm-hmm. from the bounce back scheme or whatever policies the government had. And I'm going to deal with them in exactly the same way, but maybe just for different amounts of time. What do you think of that plan?
That's so interesting because it really tells us a lot about how our system works, right?
It doesn't do anything.
It doesn't do anything in both instances, but also one of these people harmed more people, realistically, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If you defraud that government...
Well, you harmed more people a little bit, and then very much harmed one person the maximum amount.
I mean, embezzling money from a government fund for a pandemic is not just going to hurt people. I mean, it's going to kill people. People will have died because of the shoddy... people will have died because of Rishi Sunak's lovely, beautiful, 100% well thought through scheme to get people out into restaurants during a pandemic. People will have died because of certain Tories giving their good old mates contracts, PPE contracts, when they realistically should not have gone to their mates. People will likely have died from that, right? I mean, from the consequences of that. It's less about the absolute amount of harm done per person, or even absolute harm, you know, in total. It is about how visceral it feels for us. Someone that does a murder, bad, the worst, horrible. Someone that through their actions or inaction allows many, many more people to die. It's fine. Well, we'll be mad at them in the papers, then we'll forget about it in a couple months, right?
I can't comprehend that, Corey, so therefore I don't care.
Let's see if you can comprehend this then. I've got some world...
Unlikely.
I've got some world stats.
Okay.
Now, where do you think Scotland and England and Wales, those are two separate, and also Northern Ireland, who is separate again, where do you think those three groups of countries place on the world scale for prisons? Now, this is, just so you understand, this is based on the prison population per 100,000 inhabitants in OECD countries. Mm-hmm. Now, if I'm not mistaken, OECD stands for the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, and also... Russia and China.
And also Russia and China.
And also Russia and China.
Okay. Well, I think I would imagine, I mean, just instinctively from the propaganda I received from my country, I'd imagine Russia and China are quite high on that. They probably have political prisoners, that kind of thing. Maybe not. Maybe not. Who knows?
I mean, yeah, you're not.
But I also think that those four countries you mentioned, the ones that we are live in or near, I think they're pretty high up too. Yeah. Scotland was higher than England, my memory of.
Marginally, yeah.
I reckon they're in like the top 15 countries.
Mate, you know what? You should think better of us. We're a little bit better than that, aren't we? So obviously, first off, is the United States, number one.
Leading the pack.
Absolutely. They're the best in the world at everything.
Setting the pace.
Racism, we do that best. Slavery, we do that best. Prisons, we do that best. Hey, America, that's one thing. It's the same thing. You can't brag about being in the best of the world at the same thing.
Yeah, those three things are the same thing now. They didn't used to be the same thing. They are the same thing now.
So if we look at this, US first, then Russia. I'm not going to read out all of these, but there's Turkey, Israel, New Zealand is higher than us.
Whoa!
That's
interesting, because I perceive them to be quite a like wokey country.
I don't know how much goes into this, you know, to be honest. Like, yeah. I don't know. I mean, obviously the, I guess, what's the word? The sort of state of the prisons, the sort of living conditions in the prisons.
That's true.
Can be
it's
vastly
different. Yeah.
I mean, in Finland, prisons are very different than they are to the UK. So, I mean, we can't just look at these raw numbers and then draw conclusions from
You're going to go to prison. Yeah, go to prison in Norway.
I'm not going
to
lie. I'm surprised. New Zealand and Australia are both higher than us.
Not Mexico, surprised about Australia.
I forget often that Australia is quite right wing
at
times. Yeah. They've been known to be. They've been known. Anyway, just moving past all of this, Scotland comes in at 16, sorry, and England and Wales are at 17, and then Northern Ireland sits at 31st, just below Ireland, who is at 30.
As opposed to just above Ireland, geographically.
Exactly. Germany's just after Northern Ireland. Then you've got Slovenia, Denmark, Norway, Netherlands, Sweden, Finland, Japan, Iceland. Now, obviously, there's many different reasons that that countries can come in at different areas here. You know, I mean, if you've got capital punishment, you wouldn't have even one prison.
But the irony is that America's number one and they have capital punishment.
America are the bad guys in this story, as is often the case. Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
Hark, the ad bell, he does sing.
He sings for Patreon, I think. If you head over to our Patreon at patreon.com/SciGuys, you can get a whole host of cool things. What can they get, Luke?
Oh, blimmin' heck. They can get so many things. There's bonus episodes. You can request topics for episodes. There's an entire other show called After Dark where we discuss sort of philosophical things and just general discussion, the kind of stuff that you imagine we talk about after we've finished recording. Well, that is when we do it, so that is what we do. And lots of other stuff. What else is there?
You get your name at the end of every single SciGuys episode. You can also vote on topics. You get to choose what we do. And at the end of the episode that's voted on by our patrons, if it's your first month being a patron, you get thanked by name, by us, the Sci Guys. Isn't that fun?
That is really fun. I'll use my vocal cords to say your name with a 50% probability, because Corey says half of them.
That's very true. So head to our Patreon at patreon.com/SciGuys. The last little bit of stats that I want to give you is about people with neurodivergent conditions. Why might I be interested in that? Well, who bloody knows? So, a recent joint review by the Criminal Justice Inspectorates estimate that around half of those entering prison have some form of neurodivergent condition which impacts their ability to engage. This is much higher than in the outside community, where the working consensus among professionals is that around 15 to 20% of individuals have at least one neurodivergent condition. That is insane. 50%. 20% up to 50%.
20% up to 50%. Okay, so that's not quite as bad as the jump for people who are black being in prison, but it's much worse than the other ethnicities.
I mean, in sort of like ratios, it's not as bad.
Yeah.
But in terms of, you know, actual just numbers of people, it's pretty bad, right? It's a difference of 30%.
Yeah, that is crazy.
I'd hope that me just reading out these stats is making you think, because... Look, I know that reading out stats at the start of a podcast like this, it can be kind of boring, it can be dull, and I try not to do it often, but I think that these statistics are important, and I think they're personally kind of interesting. But I think they're important to understand the sort of critique that I have of prison, and I hope that you are now thinking about the same things that I'm going to be bringing up throughout this episode. I hope you're like engaging with this and thinking, wait, hold on. There are problems here.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because you take things like, for example, racism, for example, which the majority of people accept that racism exists. And then you look at these prisoner statistics broken down by ethnicity, and you see this incredibly ridiculous sort of correlation between certain ethnic groups and prisoner population. And you obviously go, okay, so there's something going on in the society, other than if you're drawing, as we used to, a direct correlation between, oh, it's because of the race, that's why that's happening. Obviously, we don't do that.
Because darkies do crimes, bro.
Right. But
it's in them genes.
And so you go, okay, so there's a cause there, right? If you had a perfect society, if you accepted the sort of premise upon which prisons were existing, and you don't assume for some gene, some crime gene in certain part of the population, then you'd expect to see a roughly like representative sample of people by ethnicity in prison, right? Mm-hmm. That's what you'd expect to see. And you don't draw a correlation based on race to why they're in prison. And so you then go, okay, so there's societal stuff going on. Right, cool, we can do that. But the thing is with the with neurodivergent conditions is that you've obviously got a situation where some people are set up to be end up in prison for whatever reason.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't mean that in terms of like, right, so then we need to find those people and put them away. What I mean is like that system is sort of rigged against those people, right?
Yeah.
To begin with. And also to show that that's not their fault. They're not doing that on purpose.
Or maybe there are other things. Like if we're seeing this, is just putting all these people in prison the best way forward? Is there something else we can do? These are the kind of things that I would hope people would start to think about. This is what I was referencing at the start. Like, we have this information. The data is here.
Yeah.
What are we doing about it?
And what I mean by that is just that a portion, and I'm sure we'll get onto this, Corey, but a portion of the purpose of prisons is supposed to be a deterrent, right?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be a deterrent. In which case, the deterrent's not working.
You're so right, okay? And, I mean, that is sort of, you know, the 20% up to 50% of neurodivergent people. Around 3 in 10 people, 29%, who chose to participate in education in prison were identified as having a learning disability or difficulty following assessment in 2019 to 2020. And despite this, the offender assessment system only records 924, or 1%, as having a learning disability. So if you look at this, 3 in 10 people who chose to participate in education in prison were identified as having a learning disability, but only 1% of all prisoners are recorded as having a learning disability. So what could either be happening here is, is that the people who choose to participate in education in prison, there's just more of them that have learning disabilities. Or perhaps learning disabilities are underdiagnosed in prisoners.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah.
So... as in they're underdiagnosed by people. So people have learning difficulties that are undiagnosed in the real world.
That aren't registered and like, you know, it's not registered.
And so they're not getting help for it. They're not able to, like, oh my gosh, that's dreadful.
I don't know if it could be registered in the real world and just not on the prison system.
They're not accounting for it. And
exactly.
They may not have taken it into account in their trial, like all sorts of things.
Yeah. And I'm just reading all this verbatim because, I mean, like, it's information. It's just the easiest way to get it across, right? A study has estimated that a quarter of people in prison have attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD. Around 1 in 10 have, so that's 9%, have an autism spectrum disorder. And around 1 in 10, 9% have an intellectual disability. 10% of people in prison, an estimate from this study, 10% of people in prison are autistic, or 10% of people in prison have a learning disability, or 25% of people in prison have ADHD, which, like,
25%.
We've discussed this. The population of people that have ADHD is maybe about 5 to 10, 15-ish%, depending on how you read. It's underdiagnosed, it's hard to gauge, but like maybe 5-ish%, right? Let's say 5%. 25% of people in prison have ADHD. ADHD, a condition that makes it difficult to not be impulsive. It makes it difficult to follow instructions. It makes it difficult to not fall into patterns of addiction to self-medicate. All of these things that are criminalized, right? Not following instructions properly is criminalized. Literally causing a public disturbance, like, you know, like an autistic person might do if they're having a meltdown, or, you know, someone with learning disabilities might do if whatever condition or disorder they have kind of impacts their behavior in that way. Or someone with ADHD might do because they are understimulated and have, like, not enough impulse control. If you're in public and you cause a public disturbance, do you know what can happen there? You can go to bloody prison, because, do you know what, as a crime, is breach of the peace.
I also
imagine... Is antisocial, like literally being antisocial is not allowed. It is a crime. It is illegal, right? Like, being, like, doing an antisocial thing, you can get in trouble for that. You can literally go to jail.
I also imagine they're probably going to be more harshly treated by jurors as well, because they're not going to present as typical, right?
Or likable.
Or they might seem sort of unpersonable, or they might seem just sort of strange or erratic, a bunch of normies are going to look at that and go, danger, 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 put it in a box.
Dude, we have data that suggests or shows that autistic people who aren't autistic, kind of automatically, almost instinctively, kind of dislike autistic people sometimes.
Mm. Well, because, you know, they don't understand them. They can't map a sort of mental model onto them.
Without even knowing that
they're autistic. And then they just get, like, cognitive dissonance and go, oh, get away.
To some degree, it makes sense, right? If I'm looking at someone who isn't, like, engaging with me with the normal sort of facial cues that I'd be used to, something's off, and my brain is gonna tell me that. Now, when I'm, you know, like, usually nowadays, I'm like, okay, well, this person might be autistic, like, bear that in mind. And then it's not a thing, but, like, if someone isn't picking up on cues, or isn't giving out, or is giving off sort of social cues that they're not intending, or isn't giving off social cues where you might expect them, you know, it's going to mess with how you're viewing that person. And hey, maybe that's something we should take into account. But the ADHD one really gets me, because, dude, drug offenses, if, like, people with ADHD are prone to addiction, man. Like, drug offense, you're just going to go to jail.
Especially,
like,
if they're undiagnosed. They're going to have found something that makes their life just a little bit better, a little bit easier. And it's not really the medication they would be best to be on, but they can get it themselves. A load of people I know with ADHD smoke a bunch of weed.
Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't really fix it, but it makes their life more bearable.
I know people that, like, you know, they'll drink a ton of caffeine, they'll do harder uppers, they'll smoke cigarettes.
ADHD medication is speed.
Yeah.
So, like, they're going to go, imagine they discover speed and they go, oh my God, I feel like a normal person.
Man, I'm on 4 Ritalin
a day. I'm going to do speed now.
I'm on 4 Ritalin a day. I take stimulants daily. Like, I don't like not being on them, because I can't. You know, it just makes life that bit easier, you know?
Yeah.
And yet, if you have unmedicated and undiagnosed ADHD on top of the impulsivity and whatnot, there is irritability and not necessarily violence, but, like, you know, sort of being a little bit more volatile, which could lead you to ending up in prison.
And could lose, at the sort of lower end, could lose you to, cause you to lose your job.
Yeah.
And then that causes you to be in desperate need of money, and you need to, like, steal something or that kind of thing. It's a spiral that, you know, you're much more likely to fall down as somebody with ADHD.
Absolutely. And if we look at some more of this, I mean, you could see that the Equality and Human Rights Commission, they published a report into inclusive justice, and they found that 3 out of 4 criminal justice professionals surveyed in England and Wales said that defendants' impairments were sometimes or always missed. So they asked criminal justice professionals in England and Wales, and 3/4 of them, or 3 out of 4, said that defendants' impairments were sometimes or always missed.
Do you know what happens if, for example, you have a jury that's going to try an autistic person?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any sort of coaching to that jury about like, this is how, that would be good to know, or like, it'd be, I really hope that exists. Like, this
would hope so.
This is the kind of thing that you might observe. It doesn't mean anything. It just means like they're different to you.
But then it may exist, but then it also might not be universally applied or applied, to, there's people who are going to be undiagnosed. There's people who could be diagnosed, but these things might not apply to. It's not just in the concept of the system, it's also the implementation. Do you know what I mean? So it's not just the concept of these, I guess, accommodations, but the implementation is incredibly important. And honestly, I don't trust our justice system to implement any of that sort of stuff remotely effectively.
No, but at the very least, the lawyers defending the person, if they should be trained in spotting these things and going, oh, wait, this, my client has this thing, I can get them a diagnosis now.
But if you look to the US, people, they don't have enough time. Public defenders don't have enough time. I can't remember the exact number, but public defenders have basically no time to work on the caseload that they've got.
Of course, but my point is that the state are incentivized to do this, because if it's costing us £40,000 a year to keep someone in jail, you want to make sure that you don't put someone in jail who you don't need to put there.
We'll get there.
We'll get there.
Back onto it. Prisoners with learning disabilities or difficulties were almost 3 times as likely as other prisoners to have clinically significant anxiety or depression, and many were both anxious and depressed. The government has invested $75 million in liaison and diversion services in police custody suites and criminal courts, and the rollout of liaison and diversion services achieved 100% coverage across England in March 2020, right? So that's just giving you some stats on prisons. Right? Not good. Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
He's ringing again. Why is he ringing this time, Corey?
He's ringing for After Dark Loop.
Why have we gendered our ad bell, Corey?
Because he's a boy and I want to respect him, just like I respect After Dark, our sister show to this podcast, Sci Guys. After Dark is what happens after Sci Guys ends. We just chat about whatever we want to chat about.
If you've ever been listening to Sci Guys and gone, God, I wish there were less facts, then you can listen to After Dark. I wish there were more opinions in this show.
More philosophy and politics.
Yes, After Dark is the show where Corey and I sit down, and maybe with a guest sometimes, sit down and discuss just more sort of floaty, woo-woo-y ideas about things we think with our brains.
And where can they watch this wonderful, wonderful show, Luke?
Well, they can listen to it and watch it at patreon.com/ Sci Guys, our Patreon, where you can also support us and help us keep doing this thing that you apparently like us doing.
Did you say patreon.com/Sci Guys?
Yes, I think I did. I think I did say patreon.com/Sci Guys.
Well, if you want to listen to After Dark, it seems like you should get to patreon.com/Sci Guys.
That's patreon.com/Sci Guys, in case you weren't paying attention.
Now pay attention, because we're about to start the show.
Oh, my attention has been paid and will continue to be paid until the end when I go home.
Let's move on to the sort of prisoners' rights and privileges. Again, taking this right from the UK government. So, prisoner privileges and rights. So, prisoners who follow rules can earn privileges. This is called the Incentives and Earn Privileges Scheme. A prisoner may be able to get more visits from family or friends, be allowed to spend more money each week, and privileges are different in each prison. Staff can explain to the prisoner how the scheme works. In terms of rights, prisoners have rights including protection from bullying and racial harassment. Good for them.
Oh, I'm sure that's definitely well enforced.
Being able to get in contact with a solicitor. Healthcare, including support for a mental health condition. And all prisoners should be able to spend between 30 minutes and an hour outside in open air each day.
Wow, what a treat.
30 minutes in open air each day. That's obscene. Punishments, though. Let's get on to punishments. Because, you know, the rights and the privileges are so great. Of course, the punishments are going to be on par there as well. A prisoner who breaks the prison rules is normally punished. They can be kept in their cell for up to 21 days... given up to 42 extra days in prison on top of their original sentence, and the prison can take away privileges, for example, removing a TV from a cell.
Just babying people. Yep. It's just dreadful.
I'm just letting you know this is the UK. I just want to give you an idea of the rights and privileges that exist here straight from the government.
This is the UK.
UK.
I thought that was the US.
No, this is the UK
this
government
is the UK.
Website. Yeah, UK Gov. The examples that are on the UK Gov website are disgusting. you can, if you're good, you can see your family and friends more.
What is how is good defined again? Is it just general good
rules,
behavior?
Good behavior,
right,
sort of
okay,
thing. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's different. It's different, but from prison to prison. And then being allowed to spend more money each week, which there shouldn't be a limit.
Yeah,
unless
it's
you're
your
trying
money.
To curb. Unless you're trying to curb people.
Curb inflation.
Selling
inside
stuff
the
in
prison.
Well, because this is a thing, right? Because prisoners' rights are so restricted, what they're able to access is restricted. You've got sort of an internal economy that ends up. Forming.
Yeah.
And I guess to sort of curb that, you want to limit how much they're spending, and also if you just limit their rights in general, it's not very nice.
Thing is, though, it's a sort of self-reinforcing spiral, because yeah. if somebody's good, then they get more visits from their family, then they get more blah 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 blah. They're more likely to actually be a good prisoner. In that sense.
And I don't know if there's any evidence for that.
They're trapped in their cell for 21 days. They're not going to come out and be like, oh, well, I'm ready to behave really well and obey all the rules, having had 21 days in my cell.
Man, if sitting in a cell was enough to deter someone, do you think they'd be in prison? Like, realistically speaking,
yeah.
Right? Like, do you think that they would have ended up in prison
you naughty,
if this
naughty
punishment
boy.
Was enough?
You didn't behave the rules, even though the only reason we put you in here is because you didn't behave the rules, and we're suddenly surprised that you didn't behave them anyway.
Look, go to your room. Oh, you're still being naughty? Go to the corner of your room. Like, I mean, this didn't... I'm still unbothered here. But that's the sort of rights, punishments, and privileges that are afforded to UK prisoners. I just want to briefly talk about the history of prison, because I mentioned that you know, these things seem like they've been around for a long, long time. And we did an After Dark on this. We chatted a bit about it.
Very good After Dark.
You can access that if you go ahead and join up to our Patreon by the end of the month. It will be up by the end of the month,
yeah.
Is the point. Until the late 18th century, this is from Britannica, prisons were used primarily for the confinement of debtors, prisons accused of crimes and awaiting trial, and convicts awaiting the imposition of their sentences, usually death or transportation, or deportation overseas. So,
yep.
Imprisonment was rarely a sentence that was given. You know, it wasn't given out as a sentence. It wasn't, you know, oh, you've done a bad thing, go to prison. And even then, it was only for minor crimes. You'd put someone in jail for a bit. Like, oh, you did a bad... Go sit
you
in the Notting
Step bread.
For a bit. Exactly, that sort of stuff. I mean,
don't steal bread.
Exactly, that sort of stuff. Capital punishment started to decline. And if you're not killing off all the people that are doing bad stuff, you have to keep them somewhere, I guess. And that's kind of how prison became, you know, this this thing that we know it as today. And that was towards the end of the 18th century. We're now in the 21st century, right? So it's only... 300 years-ish that's gone from where we were then to where we are now. And obviously that's a decrease in capital punishment. That's got a lot to do with it, which is great, fantastic. But putting people in prison for indeterminate periods of time or for long periods of time, it's not necessarily a good option just because it's better than killing people a ton, right?
Yeah.
So now imprisonment then became, you know, towards the end of the 18th century, as I said, became the chief means of punishing serious offenders, Britannica is saying there. And it then started to spread across the world. And then by the early 21st century, a majority of countries had abolished the death penalty in law and practice, and imprisonment was consequently the most severe form of punishment their courts could impose. The idea of what prison is, should be, all of that sort of stuff, developed over time, right? Like in the 16th century, in Europe, they built rehabilitation houses for like minor offenders and vagrants. Basically, if you were poor or homeless, they would put you in this place. And they kind of focused on work and personal responsibility. Kind of, you can see where prisons come out of that now. They would get ill because there was poor sanitation. There's literally this thing called jail fever, which was typhus, outbreaks of epidemic typhus known as jail fever, occasionally killed not only prisoners, but also jailers and more rarely judges and lawyers involved in trials. And then in the late 18th century, as I said again, modern prison developed in part as a reaction to the conditions of local jails at the time. So the way that jails were kind of informed how prison ended up being, because it evolved in response to that. But what I guess, what I hope you can kind of see from this here is that prison wasn't always sort of the punishment. It was capital punishment for a long, long time, you know, along with deportation and a few other things, right? Now, those things aren't good. Prison also isn't good, though. Mm-hmm. Just because we're not killing people doesn't mean that it's a huge amount better. I mean, literally, from this, you can see in 16th century, people were dying from poor sanitation. And that's not hugely different now. People still die from poor sanitation in prisons. And the emergence of the sort of penitentiary is the next sort of a part of that Britannica article, which I thought was really interesting. Because penitentiary, obviously, a place, you know, to be punished or personal reform, it says there. Now, Jeremy Bentham, who we've spoken about before on the podcast, he is the guy that I guess founded my university. I've seen his head stuffed.
Ah, yes.
And his body
eugenicist.
Stuffed.
The guy with the hair chart, like with all the different hairs.
Was that Jeremy?
I think there might have
maybe.
Been.
Maybe. Who knows? Look, he was a philosopher.
I might have just libeled Jeremy Bentham.
Look him up. It's fine. He's dead, okay? He's stuffed.
You can't libel the dead, Corey.
So he had a hand in this, right? The sort of idea for convict prisons. And then in the early 19th century, penitentiaries were established in Pennsylvania and New York. And this new type of prison started to spread, you know, sort of across the world. They then started to experiment with different kinds of rehabilitation. They thought, do you know what's real good? Personal responsibility. Let's put people by themselves so they can think about what they did. Boom, you got some solitary confinement, which is good.
I mean, does not have
any negative health impacts whatsoever.
There's a leap of logic there. Personal responsibility. Therefore, let's put you in a cage and make you on your own. That's not what personal responsibility is. Nobody's personally responsible. We exist in a society with an economy and we look after each other and we work for each other and we make products for each other. That's not what personal responsibility is.
It literally says here, solitary confinement of criminals came to be viewed as ideal because it was thought that solitude would help the offender to become penitent and that penitence would result in rehabilitation. So basically, if you sit by yourself, you'll feel bad about the naughty step.
Sure.
It's the naughty step.
Yeah.
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 It's literally that. But
did
adults.
That work? Did people become penitent? Sometimes they maybe did, but...
I mean, if it worked, would we still have prisons now? Increasing in population?
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, probably. Well, the trouble is there's always new people. And are those people, new people born penitent? I guess they're not. So keep putting them on the naughty step forever.
Yeah. And look, I mean, I just want to briefly touch on the psychology of prison. I've spoken there a little bit about solitary confinement. I don't need to go too deeply into this. You can Google solitary confinement and basically all you'll find is articles and papers and any number of things, blog posts even, about how, not going to swear, about
go,
how bloody
just makes
bad
you
it
go
is.
Mad.
Yeah.
Like,
because,
for want of a better word, I know it's not a good word to use, but it just makes you go mad. That's what it does.
Yeah. I mean, putting someone
doesn't make
by
you
themselves,
penitent, it makes you go not well.
Yeah. I mean, putting someone by themselves for an extended period of time is going to mess with them because people are not supposed to do that. Yeah.
We're social beings.
Yeah.
It is a form of torture. Not cool, man.
No, it's not. But hey, if you do a bad thing, all your rights get taken away at the whim of the state. So, you know, don't do a bad thing, I guess, and the state won't rescind your rights. Hey, look, can you remind me what a right is?
I don't know the legal definition of a right. I would imagine it is basically like a... You know, you have sort of, every society sort of has axioms upon which it is based. Axiom being like an assumed stated fact that we don't necessarily have to prove, we just assume it to be true. So like an axiom of the American Constitution is we hold this truth to be self-evident that all men are created equal.
Except for the black ones
and the women.
And the women ones.
So, yeah. So like, that's sort of like a, we hold it to be self-evident and true that all men, in this case, white male men, are created equal, except for the fact that they're not because we don't take money at death and we have inherited wealth and like nepotism and all those things. But anyway, ignoring those things, yeah. All men are created equal. And that's like an axiom. It's like a stated truth that you don't have to prove. It is just a stated fact. What a right would be then is like, it's one of those sort of like things that we will say this is true within our society and the state and the apparatus of the state is set up to try and force that to be true within the confines of our society.
So would you say that a right is something that can be taken away from you if someone decides that it should be? Because I personally feel like the concept of a right and the differentiation between a right and a privilege is that a right is something you get no matter what. And a privilege is something you get based on...
By the definitions of that prison thing that you just read out from the government, yes, you sort of have... These are the rights that you have, and then privileges are like... The good behavior rewards rights are like, no, you just have a right to that, and the apparatus of the state will just defend that. Now, theoretically, obviously, these things are just made up. They're just like, they're not really true, but So, you know, you could change the definition of a right if you want to make it rescindable. But I would say that probably you have a word there in your criminal justice system, privilege. That's probably better if you want to be able to rescind them.
Well, my point is just for people who are listening and watching to consider perhaps the shaky foundation that they are placing themselves on when they accept that rights can be removed from people under circumstances like these. And you may be thinking, hey, Corey, if someone does a murder or does some bad sex crimes and whatnot, maybe they should have their rights taken away. And I'll say to you, okay, now what about the people who are falsely accused of murder? What about the people who, you know, are in prison for things that aren't those crimes, that aren't even violent crimes? Where does it end? And also, have you ever broken the law? I mean, I know you have. I know that everyone listening has almost certainly broken the law at some point.
I accidentally stole a packet of soy sauce today.
Luke.
Look, I paid £5 for sushi and it didn't come with any soy sauce. And I then went back and got the soy sauce. And then
smashed
I left
the window.
I left and I was like, oh, this soy sauce has a barcode on it. I probably... Oh, no. So take away my rights, government.
But my point is that people... Yeah, but people do just break the law constantly, right? Because, look, people will speed. Right? It's sure. Against the law to speed, but people will speed because they feel like they know better. There are laws that you need to follow and laws that you don't need to follow. And I agree with that. Laws are not morality. Laws are not the be-all and end-all of what is right and wrong. Laws do not dictate for me what I think I should and should not do. They really actually don't. I mean, like, but some people have this view that laws are a solid idea of what is good and what is not. But obviously it doesn't make any sense because laws change all the time. And if that were the case, then morality would be constantly in flux in terms of, you know, like whatever laws were present at the time. But my point is that people break laws. It's very easy to break laws. It's very easy to be a criminal, you know, and if we use the word criminal, not just to mean people who have been tried to a crime, but people who have actually committed a crime, whether or not they've been caught or anyone knows about it. Most of the people in my life, I know, I've broken the law, even in some minor way. And so... The thing I'm saying there is that maybe
Corey has criminal friends.
You literally just admitted to committing a crime, Luke. Anyway,
I'm your friend, Corey. I stole the soy sauce packet.
Colleague. Anyway, my point being, breaking the law is very easy, and if you separate yourself from criminals, you're wrong, because most people you know are in some way a criminal. They have broken the law in some way. You think that it's fine for people's rights to be removed if they do something bad enough, but we're removing people's rights when they do things that aren't bad enough. It's very easy to break the law. And I don't see how something can be a right if it can be just completely removed from you. Not necessarily just for the safety or, you know, benefit of others, but just because you did a bad thing. Well, we're going to teach you a lesson by taking away this thing that we say that everyone should be entitled to.
It is so interesting how much of our society is sort of, it's sort of, exists to manufacture consequences to things, which I find fascinating. I'm not necessarily saying that's a bad thing, but I just mean that, like, and this is, we'll get onto this, I'm sure, about sort of our sort of fetishization of punishment, of like, oh, I love it when someone who does something that I don't think I'd ever do and I think is bad gets punished for it. I got a real kink for that. Yes, that gets me going. But like, it is essentially like manufactured consequences, because the world doesn't give consequences for everything, right? You do some things in the world and the world doesn't sort of prod back at you and punish you for it. It does in some things. Like if you forget to eat food, the world goes, well, you're probably not going to have a body for much longer.
Poke a lion, you get bit.
Yes, exactly. Poke a lion, you get bit. There are real consequences in the real world.
Yeah.
And then we sort of have this sort of next layer on top of it of like manufactured consequences to try and disincentivize certain behaviors. And I just find that as a concept fascinating. I went on holiday with a lawyer once and I just spent the whole holiday just quizzing her about legal philosophy, and just I find it so fascinating just asking her, like, so what's the philosophy of this and how does this get enforced and why did we come to this conclusion? It's just
it's so interesting. It's
fascinating.
So interesting.
Because there is a real, you know, there's a long line of people who really sat around all day thinking like, oh, what should we do and what shouldn't we do, and like and really, really well-intentioned like people thinking about legal philosophy. And then there's also a bunch of bad people, a bunch of biased people, a bunch of people with interests that are being served and all that kind of stuff. But the real core of, like, if someone does something we think is not good, which things do we think are not good? How do we deal with those things? All that kind of stuff. I find that deeply fascinating.
It is terribly interesting. No, you're not yeah. wrong. I mean, I was kind of briefly touching on the psychology of prison. I just want to just briefly touch on this. Mm. We've spoken about neurodivergence. We've spoken about how the sort of harms of solitary confinement. But it goes beyond that. There are more than 10 million prisoners worldwide, and the prevalence of all investigated mental disorders is higher than the general population comparisons. Although the extent to which prison increases the incidence of mental disorders is uncertain, there's considerable evidence of low rates of identification and treatment of psychiatric disorders. Now, this is from a paper from 2016, The Mental Health of Prisoners, Review of Prevalence, Adverse Outcomes and Interventions. The idea here, what it's kind of getting across, is that people in prison have higher rates of mental health disorders. Whether that's, you know, something that happens when they go into prison, or whether something that happens beforehand, and that's why that can contribute to them being in prison, kind of irrelevant. If there's a higher instance of mental health disorders in people that are in prison, maybe mm-hmm. that's something we should look into. Mm-hmm. It says here, prisoners are also at increased risk of all-cause mortality, suicide, self-harm, violence, and victimization, and research has outlined some modifiable risk factors. It is just so interesting to me that the data is there. It is not a question of does prison work or does it not. Prison doesn't work. We know this. And yet we continue to do it. So that brings me on to my next section. Does prison work? Now, first we have to determine what the goal of prison is. So what do you think the goal of prison is? Look, I've got about three of them. Go ahead and see if you can get any of them.
Rehabilitate.
I don't have that.
Really?
Well, I mean, like actual goals of prison, not just what we tell ourselves.
Okay,
I'll put that down. Rehabilitate.
Okay, so like, I would say rehabilitate / re-educate, that kind of thing, of mm-hmm. like teaching people not to steal, what the benefits to everyone is if you don't steal, that kind of stuff. Why are you laughing at that?
Teaching people not to steal.
I don't know why that's funny.
I just think that a lot of people that steal may do so not because they...
No, I know. Yeah, of course. I grant you that some people, quite a lot of people, like a decent chunk of the people in prison for stealing will be in prison for stealing, and they know stealing's quote unquote wrong, but they had to steal to survive. Those people, I don't think they should be in prison, right? Cool. I grant you that. Now, there are people who maybe don't care that stealing harms other people. There may be some people who believe that. Mm-hmm. And so one form of rehabilitation may be that sort of... So therapy is also spoken as re-education. It's like re-educating, like whatever you missed during childhood, whatever didn't go in during childhood, whatever trauma you had during childhood yeah. that taught you things that you shouldn't have. So rehabilitation, as in, like, just helping people like have a social brain or whatever.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Rehabilitation. Taking someone who commits crimes,
yeah.
and making them into a person who won't commit crimes, right?
Yeah. And not in a manipulative or negative way.
Yeah. If we think about this, one of the better ways to measure rehabilitation and how effective that is by looking at a recidivism rate, as in how many people reoffend mm-hmm. Or how many people return to prison. So we'll get to that in a little bit. Some other goals of prison I've got are it being a deterrent.
Yep.
How about this? I'll say what all of them are, and then we'll talk about how we can measure them, and then we'll see if we maybe have any data that that can sort of give us an idea of how well we're doing on those.
Yep.
So, rehabilitate, a deterrent, so to stop people from wanting to commit, or stop people who want to commit crimes from committing crimes because they see prisons and prisoners and think, I don't want to be that, I will not do the crime.
Yep.
So basically taking the want to do a crime and making it be outweighed by the want to not go to prison.
Yeah.
That's basically what a deterrent is, right? Punishment. So you do bad thing happened to you. I'm struggling to explain this in a way that makes rational sense.
Because they're punishment, linked, aren't they? They're kind of linked.
Yeah. I mean, punishment to me doesn't make much sense. Natural consequences make sense, absolutely, but punishment in this context doesn't really... I find it difficult to wrap my head around. So punishment here is you do a bad thing. It's the concept of if someone does a bad thing, then they deserve to be, you know, sort of, I guess, punished for it. There's retribution in some sense.
There's two aspects of that. So there's the aspect that's like what we're talking about of like manufactured consequences. Mm-hmm. So like you do this thing and this thing happens to you. Now that's not a truth of the universe. That's a truth of the society you're in. Mm-hmm. And that is that aspect of it is like the aspect that is linked to the deterrent. In order to make the deterrent, you actually have to carry out your threat, right? So you got the, like, we actually do this to those people. And those people form a deterrent, like serve as the deterrent for the other people. Because if you threatened to do it and you never did it, it wouldn't be a deterrent.
Yeah, but this is interesting. I would not, like, I understand that view and I don't disagree with it entirely.
And the kink of punishment.
Oh yeah, but this is exactly it, right? I feel like the deterrent part of that is just an added benefit of the punishment. Do you know what I mean? As in, it's not, let's punish people so it'll stop other people from wanting to do this. It's, let's punish it people to teach them a lesson. That's the point of punishment. Because the idea is that if you do a bad thing and you get punishment, you're taught a lesson. And also, there's retribution.
But you're just taught not to get caught.
Exactly. So, I mean, punishment isn't really, it's really considered to be sort of, not considered, but I guess if you break punishment down, there's different elements of it, right? There's the deterrent element, the rehabilitation element, and the you get what's coming to you. That's morally justified element, right? The kink for punishment, as you call it.
Is that making you feel good about yourself for not having done it?
Yeah. Now, those are generally the goals of prison.
Well, the other goal of prison would be to take people who are genuinely a threat to other people and put them away somewhere else, like take them, put them somewhere safe for a bit, which is like, they don't have to be in pain. They can just be somewhere safe.
Yeah. No. So let's look at the sort of reasons for prison as being rehabilitation, a deterrent, punishment, and protecting society as a whole.
Yeah.
Now that's kind of touching on my sort of broader overarching sort of purpose for prison. Overall, all of these kind of funnel into the same thing. They're all the same thing. We want to make society a better place. We want to make the world a better place for everyone. Now, that is how I think we should measure prison, right? Like, is it making the world a better place? Is it doing that job? All of these other things, I guess, aren't that important, right? It doesn't matter if people are rehabilitated or not. Is the world a better place? It doesn't matter if people are punished or not. Is the world a better place? It doesn't matter if people are deterred or not. Is the world a better place, right? Do you know what I mean here? I mean, that sounds a bit odd. Obviously, I'm not saying that rehabilitation isn't important. I personally think it's quite important. But what I'm saying is that if the goal is to make the world a better place, we should not be too attached to any of these things in particular. You know, if so long as we're making the world a better place and we're falling in line with sort of like, I guess, other moral values of like, you know, don't harm people, or don't cause harm to others sort of thing.
Yeah, it's almost like the strategy. All those things are like, your hypotheses to get to your goal of the world being the better place.
Absolutely.
So you've got, okay, world be a better place. One possible strategy, whip people.
Yeah.
Do they change? Not so much. They just run faster. Okay, well, exactly. Let's not whip people anymore then.
So, I mean, ultimately, when we say make the world a better place, to be a little bit more specific, crime go down. We want less crime, right? We want there to be less crime. Now, the thing with this is that you could say, well, you know, capital punishment, that's a deterrent and it's a punishment. It's not a deterrent, and as a punishment, I think it's pretty barbaric, right? Like, you know what I mean? In that, if we talk about capital punishment, it is something that we have, as in general, as a planet, have decided, hey, maybe killing people is a bad thing, right? Maybe we shouldn't do it even with the people that we consider to be the worst. Now, I guess my point here overall is that if we want to really judge whether prison works or not, we need to judge it based on that metric. Is it making the world a better place? Is it reducing crime? Is rehabilitation, deterrence, and punishment, are they working effectively? Now, if we look at this, if we look at, say, the reoffending rate, it's not looking good. Reoffending is really difficult to sort of measure, right? But reoffending rates don't go down all that much when people go into prison. People are likely to reoffend. I think it's sort of 30s to 40% of people reoffend. Now, if we look at sort of what happens here when people go to prison and then leave prison. So for many people who leave prison, they've got a criminal conviction, right? That's a barrier to getting to leading a law-abiding life on release because it impacts employment. If you can't be employed, you can't make money. And if you can't make money, you're going to struggle to live in the society. 1 in 6, 16% of people are in employment 6 weeks after leaving prison. After 6 months, the figure rises to fewer than 1 in 4. So after 6 months, less than a quarter of people who leave prison are employed.
What do you think they're going to do, Corey? But how are they going to get food? Like, if they've not got any money.
This obviously makes sense. They would just go on universal credit, right?
Can you get universal credit? So they can't make a claim for universal credit until they've been released from prison.
And that means that when you get released from prison, if you don't have a job and you've not got any money and you've not been able to apply for universal credit because you've been in prison, then you've got a period of hardship. Which doesn't just go away.
After your hardship period, you've got another period of hardship. Also, you need an address to get universal credit.
Yes, you're not able to do it from prison. I mean, you can say, well, what about the government's resettlement schemes? What about the subsistence payment to help people on release? The government raised that from £46 to £76 in August 2021.
A week?
It doesn't say, just from 46 to 76.
That's surely a week.
The first increase since 1995. However, thousands of prisoners are ineligible, including those released from remand, fine defaulters, and people serving less than 15 days. So, look, the point here is that when you leave prison, there's not much stopping you from going back. There's all of these sort of financial things that we've been talking about, but accommodation... only slightly more than half, 56% of people released from prison between March 2020 and 2021. 30,220 people had settled accommodation on release. Just over half. 56% of people had a place. 44% of people didn't have a settled accommodation when they left prison. Around 1 in 7, 14%, were homeless or sleeping rough. People serving sentences under 12 months and those aged between 40 to 49 were more likely to be released homeless. So, 14% of people leaving prison are homeless. That doesn't make any sense. Anyway, that's that there. Let's talk about prison brain. So, prison, right? The idea is that all of these things with prison should stop people from wanting to commit crimes. They should stop people from committing crimes once they go to prison because, you know, they have been rehabilitated to become someone who is more adept at, I guess, existing in modern society, you know, more so than they were when they went in. So I found this study on prison brain. Recidivism rates of prisoners in various countries range from between 35 and 67%. Several risk factors for recidivism have been identified, such as various demographic risk factors as age and sex, unemployment, and substance abuse. Another risk factor for recidivism is a decline in general self-regulation and executive dysfunction.
Oh, hey, ADHD.
Hey, that's 25% of people in prison in the UK have ADHD, and executive dysfunction is a real problem with that. And also... a prison brain almost exacerbates executive dysfunction. Mm. This is a meta-analysis that looks at a bunch of different papers, right? And what the kind of conclusion that they've drawn from this is that prison brain seems to be kind of a thing, right? So I'll just read you the conclusion here. In conclusion, the reviewed studies suggest that various executive dysfunctions in regular prisoners. This may be due to a higher chance of impairment in antisocial individuals, deterioration of executive functions caused by the prison environment, or a combination of both. Either way, we hypothesize that the impoverished prison environment, depriving its population of many normal stimuli, may lead to further deterioration of executive functions. Within the view that executive functions are crucial for successful re-entry into society, it's imperative that the possible influence of the prison environment is further researched.
Oh dear.
Yeah. So what I'm kind of getting across here is that it seems from this 2015 study, this link below, that going to prison and not having the freedom to do things, you know, for example, spend your own money, or, you know, see your friends and family, or not be treated like a child.
At all.
Make any decisions whatsoever. Yeah. Like literally anything. Not being able to do any of that affects people and means so that when they come out, they are less able to do those things that they were already maybe not very capable of doing before they went in.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Cool. We should look into that.
Yeah. So, look, I mean, and you could say, oh, well, people deserve to be punished, right? But, like, we've spoken about this already. Do people deserve to be punished? If 25% of them have ADHD, 10% of them are autistic, 10% of them have learning disabilities, are there not other ways that we could be dealing with this? Better ways to cover this?
Well,
and so you then start,
like,
to think...
It's almost irrelevant. Like, okay, people deserve... Right, sure, there's loads of people who are outside who deserve to be punished. Some people are rude. Some people are really horrible to people. Some people manipulate people. Sure, yeah, but, like, does it actually... does it make the world better? Does it make the world better or does it make the world worse? I think it probably makes the world worse.
So, yeah. And so then you're obviously going to be asking the question, because I feel like we've kind of touched on enough reasons here to determine that prison isn't working in terms of rehabilitation, in terms of being a deterrent, and in terms of being a punishment, right? It's just not working. Now, I would say that prison does work for its intended purpose.
Oh yeah, what's that?
I've got here slavery. Now,
yeah.
Let me finish.
No, I'm with you. I'm not contesting this at all. I've watched those documentaries.
Oh boy. So a quote from the Inside Times, and you may think, oh, slavery, prison slavery in the US, of course, there's private prisons there. They make money off of the prisoners' work, blah, blah, blah. They get paid cents an hour. Yes. That is the case. But we ain't talking about the dirty old Americans today. We're talking about Britain. So, in a Freedom of Information request from the Inside Times in 2022, back end of the year, they found out that workshop pay for prisoners is typically around 50 pence an hour. Now, bear in mind, the national minimum wage is just been raised, or will just be raised. Look, it's about £9.50 around about that time, right? £9.50 is the national minimum wage for anyone over the age of 23. In the UK, these prisoners were typically being paid about 50 pence an hour. There are not laws stating that prisoners need to be paid the national minimum wage. Companies don't need to pay prisoners directly. They just pay the sort of prison a fee. Like, hey, here's a fee for using your prisoners for certain work. Now, low-risk prisoners can work with, like, sort of within the community. Higher-risk prisoners can, you know, work in sort of manufacturing things and whatnot. It's slavery. It's modern slavery. Slavery didn't go away. They just changed it to prison. That's what they did. Why do you think there are higher incarceration rates for certain races, specifically the ones that were slaves in the first place? Now, you may think that saying that prison is modern slavery is a bit of an exaggeration. It's a bit much. But realistically, think about this. We are all sitting here perfectly fine, like not considering the fact that there are people working away right now in prison to make a tiny, tiny amount of money, 50 pence an hour, right? So that when they leave prison, what? They don't really have much money. If you're working 50 pence an hour, you're not going to save up that much money. You still probably got costs. You might have family that you got to send money out to. You're not learning any decent skills when you get out of prison. You're not necessarily going to be able to find a job. You might not even have a place to live. You're doing all of this for what? To leave and then go back to prison, because ultimately that's where 30-odd to 60-odd percent of people end up again after they leave prison. It is just not working for any purpose that a rational person would think it should be working for, right? The fact that we've got an idea that we're going to trend upwards in terms of the prison population, it's because we know that it's not, we don't care about crime going down. We don't care about having fewer people in prison. We don't care about any of these things, rehabilitation, deterrent. The only thing we care about is punishment and slavery, because that's what it is, right?
Yeah. Not to give the alternate view from the British government. I think I remember you saying at one point that in the UK system, you can choose to, like, do school or do work. Is that the case?
Oh, yes. You can be. Yeah. You can choose to do school or work. And you can be paid for actually studying, which I'm sure there's some gamins in the comments very mad saying, prisoners can be paid for studying. I don't get paid for studying. Prisoners get paid a pittance for studying, roughly about the same that they would be paid to, you know, work.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, this sort of study thing is not necessarily super helpful for everyone because, as we said, you know, people have got learning. Some people have got learning disabilities. People are neurodivergent. Mm. They come out of prison with this decreased ability to exist in, you know, day-to-day society. And sure, they may have an education, but there's also the difficulty of having a criminal record, and that meaning, hey, I can't get a bunch of jobs. And even if I can get jobs, I might be discriminated against in jobs where I should be allowed to work.
The criminal record stuff, if you've done your time, is sort of an admission that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually not sort of. It's just an admission that the system doesn't work.
Yeah.
We need to still tell you they've done this, even though we've supposedly going to rehabilitate them, but they still did it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they've not really done their time. Their time is for as long as it's on their record.
Yeah, exactly.
Which in some cases is forever. Which for certain crimes, that is important. For certain crimes, like, for example, for sexual crimes, it's important to be able to not let those people near people that they might, like, hurt.
Yeah.
Sure, that's important.
Look,
but in every other instance, someone nicked some bread from a shop or had some weed, it doesn't really mean they can't, like, work in a bank or something.
I wouldn't be against the concept of a sort of sex offenders registry. You know, I'm not necessarily against it in concept, but in implementation, you can get on that for being a 14-year-old who has sex with a 14-year-old.
Someone I know quite closely he wanted to be a police officer,
mm-hmm.
And he wasn't allowed to be a police officer because when he was 17, he weed in an alley and had like a public indecency thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was just mad.
And so my point is that, hey, sex offender registry, you might think that's a really good thing. And I would say, hey, that could be a really good thing if we didn't put people on it who are not a risk to other people.
Sure.
Do you want to log people who are a risk to others? Sure. Does that mean that you should cast too wide a net? No. Casting too wide a net and like saying this, that is as though we actually care about these crimes, because what is it? Less than 5% of all sort of sexual assaults are, you know, end up resulting in a prison sentence, I'm pretty sure. Don't like, look that up yourself. Don't quote me on that.
I was told
just off the top of my head.
Basically that when I had a thing happen to me and the police officer was like, this is never we're never going to be able to do anything with this.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It doesn't matter. This is the point, right? This is the overarching point here, that prison does not work for the things that one would want it to work for. It doesn't work to lower crime rates, right? Because, and that much we've known for a long time, right? It doesn't work to deter people from committing crimes. It doesn't work to stop people from committing crimes after they've been to prison. So what the hell is the point of it? Now, the point of it is what we've said, slavery, basically. And basically that's it. Like slavery, modern slavery and punishment. Now, I kind of want to talk a little bit about alternatives, right? Because we've spoken about how prison is bad, but then what do we do then? I mean, we need to keep dangerous people away. Look, seriously, most prison sentences could be resolved by someone just doing community service or whatever. You know, non-custodial sentences. We have those already. Fines. There's problems with fines, but, you know, for certain things, fines may be appropriate. For community service could work as well. Or, hear me out, instead of trying to punish someone for a crime, if we know that 25% of people are neurodivergent, if we know that 10% have learning disabilities or difficulties, if we know that mental health conditions are higher in the prison population than in everyone else, why don't we get to the source of the problem? Why don't we think, hey, maybe there's a reason that these things are happening? Hey, maybe there's a reason that people that are of lower socioeconomic status are more likely to commit crimes. Maybe we can look at all of the data here and figure out what's going on. Hey, do you know what's going on? This society, when you're poor and you're mentally ill, or you've got untreated neurodivergencies, you're more likely to do things that are, you know, sort of bad for other people, antisocial things. And so instead of punishing people after the fact and saying you did a bad thing and it's your fault and you deserve to be punished for it, maybe, just maybe, we should get to the source of the problem and have investments in mental health care. What's the point of putting people in prison to give them mental health treatment when we can just give them mental health treatment so they don't commit the crime in the first place? What's the point of sending people, you know, to prison so that they can come out and reoffend again, only to go back in and then come out and reoffend again, when we could just give them some money so that they're less likely to be in a worse financial situation and therefore more likely to commit crimes? Instead of, you know, sending gang members to jail for being in gangs that they were in since they were children, why don't we have more programs stopping children from getting into gangs? Why don't we do all of this? And then prison wouldn't really be that necessary. I mean, even now, prison is costing money and not really giving us many results, right?
Yeah.
Let's just talk really briefly about the alternatives to prison. I mean, you know, I've got this mostly from a Guardian article from 2019 because it covered things, I would say pretty well, right? And before we get into that, actually, I just really briefly want to talk about another study I looked at, the effect of prison visits from family members on prisoners' well-being, prison rule breaking, and recidivism, a review of research since 1991. This was published in 2016. And essentially what it found, it looked at all of these, it can't draw any sort of solid conclusions because there is such a disparity in the sort of quality, the methods, and the findings of these studies. But there is a consistently positive trend. You know, there's consistently reported positive effects of prisoners receiving visits. Basically, being able to be around your friends and family when you're in prison means that you're less likely to reoffend.
No way.
We think that's generally the trend that seems to be there. Oh, sorry, not necessarily that you're less likely to reoffend. Sorry, but that there's reduced depressive symptoms in women and adolescent prisoners, and there is some evidence of reduction in rule breaking behavior. And one high quality study suggested that visits reduced recidivism and increased survival in the community. Now, knowing this, being around a support system, around family, people that you love, is going to be better for you as a person, make you less likely to break rules and whatnot. Why is our current system just pulling people away from that group? and putting them with people who have also committed crimes. Also, better physical health, both in prison and changes in health post-release, are related to the higher likelihood of... better physical health, both in prison and changes in health post-release, is related to higher likelihood of recidivating. Better mental health, both in prison and changes to mental health post-release, is related to a decrease in the likelihood of recidivating. So... basically, if you've got mental health issues and they get better in prison or immediately following your release from prison, you're less likely to go back to prison, is the point here. So what we can see from these two things, and by the way, this is from a paper from 2020 linked below, does in-prison physical and mental health impact recidivism? What we can see here is that if we maybe... you know, have people in an environment where, you know, their mental health is being focused on more and they're able to have more contact with their family and friends, maybe more freedoms, and, you know, kind of attack that prison brain and stop that from happening by, you know, giving people the rights that they would normally have, allowing them to choose what to do, not putting so many sanctions on them, all of these sorts of things. Maybe we might solve all of those individual problems there. Maybe we might see all of these slight trends actually have an effect. So, taking all of that into account, there are other things we can do beyond prison. There are sort of non-custodial sentences. So having community corrections officers. So, you know, basically being on probation, you report to someone who is like your officer, and you're like, hey, what's going on? And they keep an eye on you, make sure that nothing's going bad. That sounds pretty bloody good, right? Especially if that person who is assessing you is able to keep an eye and say, hey, it seems that you're now unmedicated for this thing. Hey, it seems like you're going through financial issues right now. Hey, it seems like your mental health is deteriorating right now. Let's get you into better care, right? There you go. Someone's probably not going to commit a crime then. Drugs, for example. Drug courts have operated in Australia since 1999, have been found to reduce recidivism more effectively than conventional custodial sentences. The key to effective drug courts is the ability to make drug treatment orders, calling for the intensive treatment and monitoring of offenders with substance issues. So, for example, if someone's doing drugs, you know, who cares why it is? Maybe it's because they're self-medicating. Maybe it's because they're traumatized. Who cares what it is, right? If someone is addicted to drugs, maybe putting them in prison isn't the best thing to do. Maybe helping them with their addiction would be better. Financial penalty, so fines might be better. Mental health care, it quite explicitly calls out here that just help with mental health issues could help. Yep. Could help that in general. It says victim-centered alternatives to standard prison sentences can invite empowerment for victims of crime. So restorative justice is a system of criminal justice that focuses on rehabilitation of offenders through reconciliation with victims and the community at large. So this can involve victims being able to confront their attackers, seek financial restitution, and also have a say on the programs the offender must undertake. While not suitable for all forms of offending, restorative justice measures have been shown to provide healing outcomes for both the victims and offenders. Look, this is it. There are so many other options.
Because that's like that. So many other options. To me, that is like that last one you said about introducing offenders to their victims. Mm-hmm. That is a non-manufactured consequence. Mm-hmm. Now it's slightly managed by the state, but it's ultimately introducing, rather than like you do this thing and this is what happens to you, not because that's what happens in the world, but because we say that's what happens. But that only happens if you're caught. Mm-hmm. And so that incentivizes you to just be better at not getting caught next time. Mm-hmm. Instead, this is going, no, this is what happens. This is the effect of your actions. This is the other side of it. This is true, the truth of the world. If you do these things, people get hurt by the things that you did. And if you are an empathetic person, you will care about that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and if you are somebody who lacks empathy, that's a slightly more complicated situation. But again, it's not your fault you lack empathy. There's a structural thing going on there. Yeah. And that doesn't mean you deserve to be punished unless you have some weird concept of the world where like God makes 10% of people have lower empathy than everybody else. And God wants you to find them and put them in a box and make them not see anyone and not feed them very well and not let them have sunlight very much.
Yeah.
That's not it. Yeah.
Yeah. We spoke about this in the bonus episode that we did, where prisoners are put under house arrest rather than being kept in prisons due to, you know, the PAN-ED. Now, I mean, basically, when you look at all of this, the sort of through line, I would say, that one sees here is that crime is not caused by people just being bad generally, right? That's not the main cause of crime. mental health issues, neurodivergence, all of these things going unattended, poverty, all of these things really strongly influence crime. And if we all want to make the world a better place, which one would hope we want to make the world a better place, right? Sometimes that means doing what is right, even though it's not easy. And sometimes that means doing something that doesn't feel as good.
Mm-hmm.
And instead doing something that actually feels quite intuitively wrong. But it's the best thing to do. And yeah. In this instance, punishment can feel good. Feeling as though someone is being treated poorly because they treated others poorly can feel really good for some people.
Mm-hmm.
It can feel great. Now, we have managed to trick ourselves into thinking that because that feels good, because that feels morally right and justified, that it is a morally and ethically good thing to do. It is not. And if we want to make the world a better place, if that genuinely is something we want, we need to set aside this desire to see people punished. We need to set aside all of that sort of stuff and actually just tackle the problems mm-hmm. at hand, because that's not what prisons aren't doing that. Prisons are not tackling the problems. Prisons are not solving the problems. If anything, prisons are making them worse. We have an obscene volume of data on this. Obscene. The only thing that's stopping us is what? Is an attachment to attachment to sort of like retribution.
Yeah.
And we need to be big boys and girls and theys and thems and just let that go and make the world a better place. Because, hey, yes, it feels wrong that a cannibal, a horrible murderer should not go to prison and instead have a sort of like home sentence supervised or whatever, right? But if that's better for the world, then I kind of have to do it.
I'm sort of struck by something you said in the opening, which was like, it's talking about the history of prisons and how long prisons have been around for. And like, if you were to plot a graph, right, and you got your first graph point is maybe like 3,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago, where we have like an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Someone steals from you, you steal from them. Someone murders your family member, you murder their family member, right? That was like stage one of humanity, right? Mm-hmm. We were just sort of fighting each other. Then stage two is like, okay, well, we'll apprehend that person and we'll sort of give them a sort of trial type thing, and then we'll either kill them or put them somewhere really far away.
Mm-hmm.
That's stage two, right? Stage three is then like, okay, we'll apprehend that person, we'll have a complex criminal justice system and we'll put them in a box somewhere. That's stage three. That's where we are now. So like, what's stage four? What is the next? If you were to draw a line between those points on that graph, where is the next place? Where that is obviously where we are going. We don't want to go back, the majority of us, to those stage one and stage twos. We're currently in stage three. And stage one and stage two are also not effective either, because we ended up at stage three. So where's stage four? What does that system look like?
Abolition.
Yeah, possibly. But also just a more holistic, like, structuring of our society.
Yeah, holistic and evidence-based.
Yes, absolutely.
I think that's the main thing. That's the main issue.
That to me is the bridge there. When you say evidence-based, when you've said, we need to move away from this kink for punishment, I think that some people think punishment, great, love punishment. So first, the first one, before we get to like getting rid of punishment or getting rid of like, yeah, our love of punishment, is does punishment actually work?
Yeah.
Like, does it actually work? Otherwise, it's just your kink.
Yeah.
And you need to recognize. If it works, then we can then have a conversation about that.
Oh, absolutely.
And is it more effective than other things? Are there things that are more effective than punishment? Punishment is one strategy to make world a better place.
Yeah, that's my point. And do you know what? I want to just absolutely clarify that what I'm saying here is not do this thing that I think is right. I'm saying what I think is right is based off of evidence. I think this thing is right not because, I've not found evidence to agree with me. I found the evidence and then changed my opinion to match that. So my point here is essentially just that if evidence is pointing to this strategy being bad and other strategies potentially being more effective, we shouldn't stick with the bad strategy just because it feels better. And if you want to stick with the bad strategy because it feels better, you're a bad person. And realistically, maybe you should be in prison, right? Like, if your idea of prison is that people who do bad things to other people should be punished, by your own logic,
regardless of whether it actually works.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I had other parts of this, you know, I wanted to look at experiments that are done on prisoners. I wanted to quickly talk about the Stanford Prison Experiment and why that wasn't necessarily as good as we may have thought it was in terms of like, well constructed or, you know, its findings being as truthful as we thought it was. Maybe we'll do that as a bonus episode. Maybe we'll do it as an episode in and of itself. Let us know in the comments what you want us to do.
I wanted to talk about treadmills.
I'm sorry. We don't have time. My point here is that there were many things that I wanted to cover in this. There's so many different things that we could cover when it comes to prison, the science of prison, just the evidence around prison working or not working. But at this point, the only takeaway is that prison doesn't work for any of the things that we say we want it to work for. It doesn't do its job effectively. What it does do effectively is keep people in jail, disenfranchise them, and make money for other people. That's what it does. That's why it still exists in the way that it does, because it's not making the world a better place. It's not making the world safer, and it's not making people commit fewer crimes. It's just making some people rich and other people richer. So that's prison. It sucks.
Yay!
Quickfire quiz!
Quickfire quiz! Dun dun dun! Prison edition.
So the rules for the quickfire quiz are the same as always. I'll ask just one question. If you manage to get the answer before Luke, if you're watching or listening, then you win. Get to the comments and let us know that you beat Luke, and maybe he'll go to jail. Who knows? Anyway, the question for you is, what percentage of the UK population is black? And also, what percentage of the UK prison population is black?
Ding, ding, ding. I have my buzzer. Whee! 3%, 12%.
Ding, ding, ding. That is correct.
Did I beat you? I hope so.
Guys, this is not something to be cheering and happy about. This is horrible. This is bad. We should be feeling mournful. It is actually horrible that it's 3 and 12%. But hey, that's it. Let's end the episode on a high. Well, that is all from us. But before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with an extra special thank you to exec producers Danito and Glitch Rabbit. And thank you for listening. You can find the references for this episode in the description. Subscribe to new episodes every Monday. And why not leave us a nice wee review? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys. Or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com. SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCore everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCutforth everywhere.
Goodbye.
Go to prison.
Prison abolition now.